Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Here we go. Michael Calhoun and
Travis Sheridan. And we're doing something a little different for this episode. We're doing a deep dive. Dennis Lauer, president and CEO of the Cortex Innovation Community, is moving on. New leadership is coming in. But we're going to spend this entire episode talking to Dennis, getting to know a little bit about the trajectory that Cortex is on and the role that Cortex has played in the larger St. Louis community and even nationally.
Yeah, how it's hooked into all of the different communities across the St. Louis area, tries to foster a community itself. And really, I think Dennis Lauer, once he leaves Cortex, is going to be spreading the word about what St. Louis has accomplished. And I think a lot of communities are going to be saying, hey, can you help us do what you did in St. Louis?
Oh, I mean, I already know that Dennis, there's probably one or two delegations a week, I would imagine, that come from out of town. That might be a lot. Maybe one a week come from out of town to see what's happening in Cortex. Because, you know, let's face it. St. Louis is not the easiest place to do things like this, and it's been working.
And we are talking about buildings and roads in a sense, but we're also talking about the physical manifestation of what we've seen happen in terms of the transformation of the St. Louis economy over the last decade or so. And it began with this brick building that was empty, and it was an old phone, I believe an old Western Electric phone factory, part of the Bell system, that now has a spinning at symbol on top and is surrounded by construction and tech workers these days. And it's really the way I think the people who don't work at a startup, or they don't really go to Venture Cafe, or they're not part of the community, they can drive by on the highway and see it and say, things are happening here in St. Louis.
Yeah, and people don't have to drive to Kansas City or Chicago to go to IKEA because things are happening, and that's within the Cortex boundaries and the district.
That is so true. IKEA here because of Cortex. And Travis joining us via Skype. You are traveling in?
I am in Baltimore, Maryland today, a very similar city to St. Louis.
Ah, so we've got Travis via remote. We're going to make contact with Dennis Lauer and really get the scoop from him.
Yeah, so stick around. Dennis Lauer, President and CEO of Cortex, coming up next on Nothing Impossible.
Welcome back to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back, Michael and Travis with you, and let's dig into something that's been impossible to miss. When we talk about innovation and startups and technology and the growth of this new economy, one of the easiest ways, I think, Travis, for people to understand it is to drive past the Cortex District, especially if they've got that that background. They've driven past it 10, 20 years ago. They know what it used to look like. And to be able to see the physical progress there might help some people understand the progress we've made overall in the economy in St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, the landscape has totally changed just there to the north of Highway 40 or Interstate 40, from rail yards and vacant buildings to now green space and rehabbed historic buildings, even IKEA. Like the landscape has completely changed.
And even if it's not within the confines of the Cortex District, there's so much development that's happening in that area from Midtown to the Central West End. And the driving force behind that, we've got Dennis Lauer on the line, who is retiring as head of the Cortex Innovation District. Thank you so much for joining us, Dennis.
Good morning. Happy to be here. Have to correct that word retiring. I'm just coming up out of the trenches a bit, but still going to have my finger in innovation helping other cities with innovation, but also continuing to help in whatever ways I can Cortex and St. Louis to keep the momentum that we've gained over the last couple of decades.
And Dennis, I want to throw another correction in there because we often refer to Cortex as an innovation district, but it was very purposeful under your leadership to shift that to Cortex Innovation Community. Is that, tell us a little bit about the importance of that type of shift.
Yeah. So there are a couple of reasons why words matter, because they define and limit our thinking in many ways. So the original business plan was a bit more like a business park with just technology buildings in it. And the theory being that if the board was able, which it was very successfully, to create boundaries, get incentives for development, have a redevelopment plan, that private developers would come in and develop the land, the 200 acres. But if it was that easy, everybody would do it. So what we really need to do, what innovation districts are, urban innovation districts, is they are communities of innovators and creators. So by redefining the name to alert people to this is what we're doing, we're creating a place where creative people and entrepreneurial people can come together and create new ideas, technologies, advance them into the marketplace. By that name change, it began to frame a shift and a pivot. And from there, we also went to placemaking and creating more of an 18-hour day. And we're still working on that, but a mixed-use master plan that wasn't just tech buildings, but that also is residential and commercial, or residential and retail, and good outdoor space that's available not only to the tenants and clients of Cortex, but also to the community in general. And then continuing that theme with the addition of a rail station, all of those things create a community of innovators, and that's what we were driving toward. So that's the first thing. The second thing I'd say is that by changing it to the Cortex Innovation Community, it starts talking about community in the larger sense and innovation in the larger sense. It's not just extreme high technology, but there's creativity in civic innovation, in all kinds of ways that we don't normally think about it. So a community of creative people who are thinking innovatively, that's what we're trying to develop, and trying to also get people to see that St. Louis is an innovative community. So all of those factors were kind of in the background as we began to shift shift our language and thinking into the Cortex Innovation Community.
And Dennis, we'd love to go through a timeline of over your tenure, how this area has evolved, and the various stitches to the greater community that have been made over those years. Give us a little bit of a background and introduction. When did you first come to St. Louis? What was the state of the organization heralding Cortex at the time? And what was this area at the nexus of Forest Park Southeast, Central West End, and Midtown? What was it like when you first came to town?
Day one.
Well, on day one, when I came to town, it was kind of like day one. It was an old industrial area, an area that had contributed significantly in the past to St. Louis's economy, but third and fourth generation buildings, many of which were vacant, a fair amount of vacant land, which Cortex had already begun to buy up to stitch together. But the infrastructure was worn out. There was no sense of place. And when you're trying to develop an innovation community, placemaking is a key ingredient. So that's where we started. There were 35 or so companies primarily. Most of those were startup companies that were in the CET, Center for Emerging Technologies, buildings, which at that time, you know, that was really not only the first statewide incubator, but it was really the mother of Cortex, because it, as companies started to grow and want to come out of there needed to be a place, and that was the impetus back in the early 2000s for thinking about developing Cortex. But in the first 8 years, there were two buildings that were built from 202 to 210, Cortex One and what we now know as the DuPont building, but nothing else in the district. And so in pivoting that business plan in ways that I talked about and also focusing on startups, we went from 35 companies in 2010 to over 400, about 420 today.
And what kind of workforce? Yeah, what kind of workforce is there now?
So workforce is interesting in innovation districts and in the traditional science parks. A lot of people think that, you know, you have to be highly educated, hold advanced degrees, because after all, it is a technology district or technology park. But the interesting thing is that there's an entire continuum of jobs. We have about 6,000 jobs within the district of all types. About 30 to 40% of those are high school or associate degree level jobs. So a lot of entry points for people with different educational background. About 40% are, you know, held by people with bachelor's degrees. The other 20% are held by people with master's and PhDs. So it's an entire continuum. And you think, you know, we've got, today we have 19 buildings, you know, that have been renovated or built new in the Cortex District since its inception in 2002. So over 17 years, 19 buildings, not a bad track record. But when you think about what it takes to maintain those buildings, what it takes to maintain the infrastructure, and then all of the other things that we do with retail restaurants that we're bringing in and activating the Cortex Commons, lots of jobs there, lots of jobs, all types of jobs. We like to think that there's a place for everybody.
And as you take a look back at how this you know, came together, you had the two buildings prior to 2010, and then the last decade was the avalanche of progress that took place. What was the first, was there a first domino to fall? Was there a first stakeholder who had to be convinced, you know, to go to the urban core as opposed to the suburbs, or some institution that really had to be convinced to go all in on this? Or when you came to St. Louis, was Cortex rolling along and move, already moving toward, had the momentum and moving toward what we see it as today?
So taking the last question first, it did not have momentum. The table was set. I mean, the reason that I came was as I explored the region over a number of days back in early 2010, it was very apparent to me that St. Louis has so many great assets, but the challenge is they're not connected, and people don't work together as much as they need to work together to advance the region. And so I saw my role as connecting the dots. So when I came in, taking the goodness that the board had teed up and the city had teed up, you know, then it was a process of facilitating and bringing additional partners to the table, an important one of which was Wexford Science and Technology, a developer from the East Coast that I had worked with previously in my other two innovation districts that I worked on in other states. We needed a developer that understood innovation districts and communities. One of the challenges nationally and internationally is that typically, not always, but typically the local developers operate out of a traditional real estate paradigm. And this is a different animal. I mean, when you're creating an innovation district, there are many layers to it. And many layers to the activation. Buildings are absolutely essential, but they're not sufficient to create an innovation district. So by bringing in Wexford to be a partner that understood this, understood how to be patient, understood what the vision was, understood the importance of placemaking, they became a very important early partner in 2010 for us. And then being able to have one of our partners, BJC, agree to put a new building here in the district as opposed to in the county. That together with the 4240 building, the yellow brick building with the turning at sign on top, those two plus the Cortex Commons, those became the three, what I would call phase one major projects that immediately created a sense of place. And what we felt coming out of the gate was we needed to change the ground game, because in 2010, you know, when you drove through here, sidewalks are in disrepair, a lot of vacant land. The street lights were the traditional kind of gooseneck halogen lights, yellow halogen lights, orange. It wasn't a very inviting place. So by changing that street infrastructure, creating Cortex Commons, renovating an incredible building, 4240, historically, and then having BJC make a major investment, it immediately put about 1,500 to 1,800 people on the ground right away. And that's what we needed, together with the DuPont building and the Cortex One building. So we immediately coming out of the gate in that second decade, beginning of the second decade of the 2000s, coming out of the gate, we were then able to create a sense of place and a density. And that's what then got the attention of other people saying, what's going on here? As far as whether we had a lot of corporate clients, no, the strategy, quite honestly, has been up until recently focusing on startups, because technology corporates don't just pick up and move, wherever they are, from wherever they are. And, back in 2010 and so after, we weren't recognized as a hub, a tech hub. And I would say that today we still aren't, but we are approaching the top of the mountain, and we have gotten the attention of a lot of East and West Coast companies in the tech sector to, it's like, something's happening there. And most recently, we've gotten the attention of a lot of venture capital from the coasts that are saying, I can get some good deals here and keep those companies on the ground. It's a better business proposition. So things are changing, and those are important elements in order to really get us on the map as a regional technology hub. But now what we found in the last 3 to 4 years is that because of our focus on startups and bringing in CIC, the Cambridge Innovation Center, where many of our startups are housed, and also with the BioGenerator, which is a life science accelerator, and their expansion of their shared space in their shared labs, that created a base for startups. That those organizations created a base for startups, and we started building density. And once we did that, then the larger corporate said, we need to look at moving into Cortex, our innovation groups, our product development groups, so that we can get closer to that innovative entrepreneurial energy. And that's what really then started to propel us, continues to propel us forward at this point.
Dennis, when we think about these innovation districts, I mean, are they in a sense the 21st century city? Like we're building out really a model for a new city, right? Because you talked about the infrastructure, and you've talked about education programs and both jobs across the scale. This is like a model of a small city.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Travis. I guess I would say that it is a new power source for the city. It's a new economic engine. It's a new way of recreating urban areas because the legacy industries are just that, they're legacy industries. And Missouri in particular, has had a lot of those legacy industries with manufacturing and with agriculture. Not that they're ever going to go away, but you know what's happened over the last 20, 30 years with manufacturing. And now with the introduction of precision agriculture, the jobs are shrinking in the ag tech side as well. So they're important. Those are important sectors that will always contribute, but it's not where the jobs are. So to replace those jobs, I think that innovation districts and a focus on technology-led economic development in urban areas, in the city and the region around it, that is a new model for wealth creation, for job creation, and it's one that every city is pretty much now thinking about. But to be honest with you, not every city has all of the elements that are necessary to really propel them toward the front of the herd. So it is a bit specialized, But it is a powerful energy right now in St. Louis, the city of St. Louis, because it's recreating not only the Cortex Central West End area, but also we're all pushing and pulling for the downtown, you know, to be able to stand it up as well.
So that's how we've acquired this powerful energy. But what's next for Cortex and its effect on St. Louis? Let's take a little break, and we'll be back with more Nothing Impossible with Dennis Lauer, who's moving on from Cortex after this on KMOX.
Welcome back to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Michael and Travis with you, and we're talking with Dennis Lauer, who's moving on from Cortex. And Dennis, we've talked about how the district has grown over the last decade or so, and the buildings, you know, that are now online, but there's a lot of construction happening now. People can see the hotel, but they can't necessarily see yet what's coming at 4210 Duncan, for instance. So what is eminently next for Cortex? What are people going to see in the next year or so?
So in 2020, our expectation is that we will break ground on three new major buildings in the district. The 4210 that you were mentioning will be our largest technology-related building, a Wexford building, and that's going to be eight stories, and it's going to be a signature architecture building. I mean, it will really attract attention. It's very colorful. It's designed, very unique design, and it beautifully fits into the slope of the grade going down from the top of Duncan down to Sarah. So it cascades down. So we're excited about that, 325,000 square feet. We also expect to break ground later this year on a residential project on the parking lot of the Cortex One building. And that'll be about 261, 262 units and wrapping a structured parking garage. And then we also expect hopefully to break ground on a neurosciences building that WashU has in planning at this point, a building which will consolidate all of their laboratories and in neurosciences. And bring it into the district, which we would then be able to leverage off of with the commercial side. So those three buildings together, we expect will be launched at some point in, actually already launched because the site work already has begun on 4210, but the other two will break ground in the months ahead.
Some people are calling. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. But I just wanted to say that those three buildings together will add another 1.2 million square feet of building space, and plus three structured garages, so almost a total of 2 million square feet, which will double the amount of space that we already have in Cortex, which is about 2 million square feet.
That's two Met Square buildings, just for people's comparison.
There you go.
You're going to be adding two skyscrapers worth there. And people are calling, for instance, the new 4210, some have nicknamed it the Sandcrawler building. The architectural features, you know, the Microsoft building, I believe that was designed by HOK. It's got the changing color panels and the curves. It's not just your square, boxy office park building. Talk about the need for this placemaking and not just putting up these boxes.
What is our mission? Our mission is entrepreneurship, it's innovation, it's creativity. So you have to have external manifestations of what your mission is. So architecture is very important. As I said earlier, buildings are necessary but not sufficient for districts. Strong architecture is necessary as well but not sufficient. But it's a component of sending a message about who we are. So having edgy designs and trying to push the envelope is very much the alter ego of these companies that it holds inside. And it was very interesting because one of the major companies that's in 4220, when they saw the design, the forthcoming design on the 4210 building, it was going to be next to them, they turned to me and said, "Gee, do you think we could renegotiate with Wexford and move to that building? Because that building really speaks to our sense of innovation and who we're about. So that kind of mentality is very important. We're not just building a campus. When I came here in 2010 and we launched on a new master plan in the first couple of years, a mixed-use master plan, there was a question of should we create design standards? And I was very much against having strict design standards other than more form-based code kinds of things of, you know, typical urban stuff of making sure the buildings were up next to the sidewalks, that quality materials were being used, but allow the creativity of the individual architects through time to be able to express their vision of innovation. And what that does is it creates an eclectic campus, a much more interesting campus. There is certainly a place for campuses that have that where the buildings look alike and are amended together, but they're serving a different constituency. We are serving a millennial and Z population of folks that are looking for creativity, looking for wanting to have an exciting place to come and work, and also sending a message that we are about innovation. So architecture is part of how we communicate and market ourselves.
Dennis, I want to ask you a little bit about the Cortex brand. As you mentioned, you know, how Cortex markets and communicates itself, both within the region. You know, Cortex is not just within the 200 or so acres. I've heard the Foundry referenced as Cortex East over on Del Mar, where the new MADE building is. There's Cortex logo over there with the support of some of the equipment that went over there. Can you talk a little bit about Cortex's role as a regional leader and that thought leadership?
Mm-hmm. So the question is, where do we go from here? We probably have 10 years left of building pads within this 200 acres, depending on the market. If the market pulls them quicker, it'll be less than that. So the board has already begun to think about, how do we take the goodness that we've created? How do we take the learnings over the last 17 years plus and translate that into broader opportunity for the region? So the board has convened a committee, a strategic planning committee, and retained some consultancy help to look at both physical expansion opportunities and what that might look like, as well as programmatic opportunities to support the innovation activities of the entire region. Is there a way that we can help lift all? And that is truly the path to success. We have to be working together. We have to be on the same page. A win for downtown is a win for Cortex, is a win for Creve Coeur, is a win for the OPO out in St. Charles, and vice versa. We have to celebrate everybody's victories. We have to be thinking about ourselves not as districts. Again, language. We come back to language. Language defines. We have to think of ourselves as a large corridor that encircles the entire region, and think of that as our St. Louis innovation community. So as we're thinking about where we go from here, we're thinking about how can Cortex amplify its impact in ways that it respects all of the nodes of presence within our larger St. Louis community.
You mentioned this concept of making sure we're lifting all, and when it comes to these different communities that we have, St. Charles to plant science focused in Creve Coeur to what's growing downtown and Square actually moving from Cortex to downtown, is the feeling more of we're all in a community and we're all working together, or is there still an element, like you mentioned when you first arrived, of competition between all of these different communities?
I think it's better than it was, but the competition is still there within the ecosystem. And we have to do better. The competition comes from, I think, largely a sense of the scarcity of resources and a feeling that if one area gets something, it takes away from the whole or it diminishes the other areas. And we need to be, you know, thinking about, no, it's quite the opposite. it creates a stronger story and value proposition for St. Louis. So, you know, my first slide in my slide deck, whoever I talk to, is a map of the region that shows nodes of presence, those four that I mentioned, across the region to say, this is our St. Louis innovation ecosystem. That's where we all, I think, have to be starting from. We have to be thinking that this is about the companies. Where is it best for the companies to go? Let them make their decisions. You know, otherwise, we continue to be factionalized. And we've got to overcome that. I mean, we have a history of that. We know that. We've gone through that in the last couple of years, multiple attempts to try to get on the same page. It really slows our progress, and it really holds us back in competition to other, what I'll call second-tier cities, who all of which are developing innovation strategies and attempting to address this issue. Now, this is not just a St. Louis regional issue. Other regions have it too. I mean, competition is competition. Capitalism is competition, all right? But at the same time, there's a higher calling here, and we can all do better if we have strategies that lift all boats and not just my boat.
You know, Michael referenced Square, and I think that's such a wonderful example of a regional approach and regional success. You know, they started with a very small presence in St. Louis. Cortex had the infrastructure, the available space, and cobbled together across several buildings, but the available space for Square to grow its presence relatively quickly, also found accessible talent. And now their downtown location, correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis, but I think that will be their second largest employment center, employment base outside of the Bay Area. And that's a win for the region.
It is a win for the region, and it also becomes a pathway for being able to attract attention from coastal tech companies to St. Louis, you know, to get them to the place where they say, gee, why did that happen? What did Square see in St. Louis? You know, and we can quickly get past the issue that they were homeboys. Okay, that the team that started it grew up here, and so they wanted to bring it back. That is true. They had a sense of wanting to spread that goodness back to St. Louis, but the value proposition for St. Louis is becoming stronger and stronger. The runway is longer for investment capital here. And now, actually, we're beginning to get that boomerang effect of people coming back more to St. Louis who were, you know, from the region as well. And we're getting an attraction of people coming into St. Louis because there's a lot of good opportunity here. So, yeah, we're on that way. I told you we're not over the top. I don't think we can consider that we are at this point a tech hub like a San Francisco, a San Diego, a Boston. But we are approaching that summit, and we all have to be climbing together.
I want to jump in with one more quick question as it relates to talent. And Dennis, I don't know if you have, you know, hard facts or even just anecdotes, but just based on your gut, the universities for the longest time were fretting over so many of their graduates leaving, and that we didn't have enough. We weren't retaining the talent that were brought up in the region. Are you seeing a shift in that? Are districts and communities and assets like Cortex becoming more attractive to our college graduates?
The answer is yes, and it's more anecdotal evidence than anything. I want to give you a little anecdote that happened about 6 or 9 months ago, when Pfizer opened their new manufacturing facility, biologics manufacturing and research facility, on Olive out in Chesterfield. I had occasion to talk with the head of that facility, who was managing and running it, and I asked him, why did you choose, after years of downsizing in St. Louis, why did you choose to put this major investment of resources and people here? And he said, well, we did a national search. We retained a site selection consultant. We asked them to look at 7 or 8 of our sites across the country where we are. We wanted to put it someplace where we have other assets. And St. Louis came out on top. And I said, interesting. So what were the deciding factors that it made it come out on top? And he said to me, it was talent acquisition and talent retention. And I said, tell me more, because for the longest time, we have felt that it's hard to attract talent here. And he said, well, we're Pfizer. We have a strong brand recognition. We recruit from Texas to Minnesota to Denver out to Nashville. Lots of great institutions there. Lots of people that we can pitch to. And he said, we don't have any problem recruiting into the environment of the St. Louis region because there's a lot of good quality of life stuff that goes on here. And here was the big deciding factor. And the retention rate is so high. They lose less than 5% per annum. It's more than the 3%, 2 to 3% per annum of employees. And that's the same story that Square's found as well. So the biggest cost on the coast in the major tech hubs is talent acquisition and retention. The turnover rate is extremely high in those hub locations. The tenure at a at any particular company can be, 12 to 18 months before they skip, to a new company with a higher salary. So to have to constantly be recruiting and constantly retraining, it adds so much the operational overhead of those particular facilities in those locations, and that's not the case in St. Louis. So those have become, this whole issue of talent acquisition is becoming, our story is becoming much better. And the universities now, we're beginning to work together more and talk together more. Again, not looking at each other as competitors, but needing to put more people into the system, into the workforce here. The scarcity of qualified employees, particularly tech-related, is not just an issue with St. Louis. It's an issue all across the country. So, again, by working together, and God forbid if I ever use the word better together, if we do work together, we can go much farther, okay? We can go much farther in this issue of building talent, creating talent, and creating training programs, both credentialed and non-credentialed training efforts that are going to put more people into our tech ecosystem, which again then makes it more attractive for companies to grow and keep their companies here.
It's that effect where folks like Travis Sheridan move in from, say, California, and then decide, I'm going to stay here.
That's the idea. That's the idea. And now we're going to put Travis back out on that circuit to go tell his story and get more people here. Right, Travis?
That's what I'm working on today, every day. That's my that's my mission. More people to St. Louis.
There you go.
We're going to take a break. We'll finish up with Dennis Lauer, outgoing president of the Cortex Innovation Community, right after this on KMOX.
Welcome back to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, finishing up our show with Dennis Lauer, the outgoing president of the Cortex Innovation Community. Michael Calhoun and Travis Sheridan with you. And Dennis, before we let you go, for folks who are wondering, maybe they do report to an office park and they park their car in a big parking lot and walk inside and they wonder, what's the big deal about these innovation districts, or why would I want to drive all the way to the city to go to work when this office park, it gets the job done now? What do you say? Is it the feel? Is it the serendipitous collisions? Copyright Travis Sheridan. From whether it's, A.B. Morey, why did they move from Chesterfield Inn, or versus, the average worker who shows up to the office every day? What is different? What's the big benefit to an innovation community?
So we've talked about tech companies. The raw material of tech companies is talent. It's all about talent acquisition and retention. And increasingly, the millennial workforce and now the Z workforce wants to, it's changed culturally in terms of the way it looks at where it wants to be, where it wants to work, how it wants to be compensated, what's important to that individual. Those factors are leading a demographic shift back to the city. So lower home ownership among this current generation workforce, less being tied to that, much more interested in working for a company that has more of a social mission or a social consciousness, much more of that workforce dictating to the ownership of that company when it doesn't feel comfortable creating technologies that could not be used for the good. So what's happened with this workforce is that it is raising lots of questions for companies. How do you grow a company? How do you acquire the talent that you need to propel the company forward and to be successful? So what we've found with the larger corporations is that one size doesn't fit all. Some people feel perfectly fine being in more of a suburban location, in more of a traditional office park or campus, where you drive in and park and go inside and stay inside, eat inside. Maybe there's a fitness center inside, and then you get in your car and you go home. Some people are very comfortable with that. But a lot of people would like more of an urban experience. So for companies that don't have an urban or in the water, they're at somewhat of a recruiting disadvantage for new talent that's graduating out of the universities. So by having multiple locations that they can bring their new hires to and give them options, they're more competitive in competing at that same trough of talent. So, we're not saying that the best thing since sliced bread is cities and everybody should move back into the city. It's not for all. It's like, you know, that's why we have different fashion styles, you know. It is important to have a strong urban presence. That's what we're trying to build here. And established companies that are moving into Cortex are doing so in part because of talent acquisition retention, in part to move their innovation components back into the city to be close to that entrepreneurial energy that's here. And, every major corporation is trying to figure this out for themselves. How do we be innovative? Because if you don't innovate, you die.
Well, Dennis, thank you for helping St. Louis innovate. And just on a personal note, thank you for being both a mentor and a friend. I've really enjoyed our time working together, and I've really enjoyed our time chatting with you today. So thanks for all you've done and the trajectory that St. Louis is on because of your leadership.
Well, thank you, Travis. Very kind. And thank you, Michael.
Well, Dennis, thank you for always being so generous with your time. We appreciate that as well as we try to spread the message of what's happening here in St. Louis. And good luck in the future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you both.
And thank you for listening to another episode of Nothing Impossible. Catch the podcast and keep listening.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.